Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Javier, we found out what Shinsuke Nakamura said to Seth, and then we had a unusually vulnerable version of this Seth Rollins character address it afterwards. Was it a satisfactory payoff to the mystery people have been speculating about all week? What do you think of how they produced it with Nakamura with captions, pre-recorded, and then the backstage interview with Seth later?
Let's go with the hard one then, shall we?
sure.
This one was just like all over the place personally for me. And this is more of a personal anecdote because I love the Shinsuke part of it. It reminded me of when they did it with Io Shirai in NXT. This is like what, you know, with the music and stuff like that and him cutting in his natural language with the translation. I love that part. Taken by itself, the vulnerability that Seth Rollins showed is fine. My issue was that with it is that the tattoo that Shinsuke was talking about is basically that's the Bushido code, which is, you know, like the Knight's code basically. And Seth Rollins has in no way, shape, or form even begun to live up to the tenets of Bushido. I mean, I'm sure Tyler Black did. I'm sure Kobe Lopez does. But, you know, the Seth Rollins character, the whole thing about him being honorable and how that failed him kind of completely mixed the mark with me because we're talking about a guy who's not modest. We're talking about a guy who's over the top. We're talking about a guy who doesn't really, even as a face, doesn't really show respect to the people around him. We're talking about a guy that, you know, has betrayed his friends, you know, throughout his career. So I just found that a little bit off-putting that the idea is that Bushido failed, you know, the code of the warrior failed Shinsuke, so he's willing to, you know, go there with Seth Rollins. He's willing to injure him, and he knows that his back is a problem. While at the same time, you know, you're talking about a guy who, you know, never really lived up to that code. So that's where the disconnect was with me personally. Because I'm a sucker for like night codes and stuff like that. you know, so it just felt, it didn't really feel like it's the reality that we live in because that's not who he is. It literally is like based on the Seth Rollins character, those are just words on his back. That doesn't mean anything, you know, that doesn't really mean anything because that's not the kind of character that he's been thus far. But you know, setting that aside, if you just go with the, you know, hey, I'm going to, it's the deeper meaning that's lost. If you remove the deeper meaning, I think that, you know, it's fine with a guy saying, hey, look, I know that your back is a weakness. And like so much so that, you know, it might be like career ending and I'm willing to end your career, you know, in order to get what I want. So it's just that other level that, you know, starts with the whole Karrion Kross because Karrion Kross's whole gimmick now is he's taking away things from people. What he took away from Shinsuke was Bushido, which, you know, so that's why he's willing to go that dark, that he will be willing to not show his opponent respect by attacking him in where, you know, and this is a sporting competition, obviously, where he could no longer provide for his family. So it's the deeper meaning that for me doesn't really connect like the way they wanted to. But like, other than that, on the surface level, it's fine.
Yeah, so I was thinking about in terms of building up this match, because Nakamura comes in not as like, you know, top of people's list of a threat to actually beat Seth and have a title reign. Is this, do you think, a good approach, the right approach, something you wouldn't have thought of? But yeah, it's kind of working, it's elevating things, it's made things personal. Yeah, your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, it made Shinsuke come out as more threatening, more, you know, moving him away from the, you know, he's hanging out with Boogs kind of character he's been for quite a while, that he's serious, that, you know, and he put on, you know, the, you know, it's a different version from what we have seen. And I think it goes a long way that he's actually able to speak in his native language and not have, you know, and really, you know, get into the character that he's trying to portray, as opposed to being kind of like the goofball he's been. So it's a step in the right direction. I mean, this is not like, you know, it's not like an A story, you know, the stuff that we've been seeing with the Bloodline and stuff like that. But, you know, it's a good opponent for Seth. I don't think this is going to be like, you know, something that's going to take us to WrestleMania or anything like that. But, you know, I think they could make Shinsuke enough of a threat to really just get us, you know, to whatever the next event is, and maybe one more match down the road.
Yeah, yeah. And I think from a match quality standpoint, now we have a little bit of an out for the match to have a theme to it, which is Nakamura going after Seth's back, and that can be the story. So yeah, that aspect of it. Do you buy into the notion that, like, this is – I shouldn't say buy into the notion. Does it seem like Seth is confessing, or maybe confiding is a better word, that, you know, fans who have high expectations for him should understand and appreciate he's probably not going to be doing this as long as, you know, Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson or Chris Jericho or AJ Styles? Is that sort of newsworthy, or do you buy that, or do you think, nah, this is just selling a story to add some drama?
I mean, there might be some legit truth to it. I you know, not having his medical chart in front of me. You know, there could very well be you know, and he didn't really say that, oh, my career is over. He is talking about more like the high, I mean, you know, without actually saying the words, he basically said the high work rate that you've been accustomed to is probably going to be toned down a little bit, is kind of what I got from him, from that, you know, the coded message, basically, from what Seth Rollins had said. I mean, I don't know how much legit that is or not, because, I mean, you know, he has, you know, really, you know, put his body, he's, you know, he's someone who really puts his body on line for a long period of time. So I don't know, like, you know, I'm sure there's some truth to it. Like the percentage, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. What does Nakamura come out? He's not going to win the title. I mean, I've been surprised before, but do you think we're seeing something here that shows that, you know, Paul Levesque thinks, hey, we can get more out of him, and even if he doesn't win the world title, and this is sort of the peak of maybe the rest of his WWE career in terms of his placement on the card, are we seeing signs that maybe they're figuring out something to do with him, and this actually might give us something to look forward to afterwards, just him moving, you know, one step down on the roster rather than just sort of being glossed in the mid-card?
Yeah, I mean, and ultimately I think it really depends on Nakamura if he's got, you know, a second wind in him, and, you know, to put on some of the you know, like some of the stuff he was doing when he first came to WWE. If you could just get like to half of that, I'd be happy. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to. I can't really say until I actually see the match and see, you know, how, you know, what they do in there and what kind of Nakamura we end up getting. Because I mean, I also don't know how much of what, you know, his tone down is because he's, you know, himself is toned down, or, you know, just, you know, age, you know, and the kind of matches he used to have. So,
yeah, I think we're, you know, at this point with Seth's character where he's so, there's like this side of him that, and you described it, doesn't really fit some of the things that he said that he, you know, whatever he lives by, but he's so over the top. Does it add to the character or break from the character to have him be vulnerable and talk about his family? They showed an image of him and Becky, you know, outside an arena with the production truck showing Paul Levesque's face on it, which was hilarious. Well, I should say hilarious, but it's like, oh, look, the one there's Triple H on a truck in 2023. But that's beside the point. Does this hurt or help his character, or really no difference either way?
I mean, I think ultimately for me personally, I think it ends up detracting a little bit because the character he's playing feels like a put on. So when it feels more like he's taking a mask and this is who I really am than this character who is who he really is. And then just, you know, it felt more like he was taking off a mask than he was actually that character showing a vulnerability.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. All right, well, let's pause and introduce the show, and then we'll get to calls, emails, more conversation about this episode of Raw. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, August 21st, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, the website pwtorch.com, and the host of various podcasts throughout the week, including the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast Tuesday flagship, which will feature Jason Powell tomorrow. So join us for that. If you have a question or a rant or a comment or a topic suggestion for us, now's the time to send it in. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. The other voice you hear on tonight's show is Javier Machado. He is a PW Torch contributor, both on the podcast and written side of things. And it's great to have him back in the co-host chair. Javier, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Now that I took a little bit of break after the G1 finally over, had to, you know, recover a bit. So
recover from, well, it ended strong, but recover from the slog of it, or recover from the exhilaration of it.
Well, I mean, a little bit of the, I mean, it's going to be a slog, even if we're like, you know, all bunch of five stars, because it's a lot of stuff in one, you know, small period of time. And I also have, you know, since I was also podcasting, I also had to be, you know, timely with it. So that was, you know, kind of the part of it. But yeah, I mean, and for the block part of it, it was kind of like, you know, not as good as I was hoping. But man, those two matches were, oh, and hey, I think I finally arrived with, somebody complained about my rating of of a match. I gave Ospreay and Naito 4.5, and, you know, it was like, how could that not be a 5? I'm like, well, because...
yes, welcome. Welcome.
I'm like, yeah, I mean, no, and the funny thing is, I even mentioned that, hey, look, you know, historical significance also means something for me. So, like, if Naito wins in Wrestle Kingdom and he does the, you know, and it's a culmination of, like, what's been, like, a, you know, like, what, like a decade long storyline at this point, you know, I could go back and revise and say, yeah, it's a 5 because this was like an integral match of what, you know, of what had happened. So. You know, it's it, but yeah, but I felt happy. I was like, oh, somebody complained that I did not.
Yes, I know. It's you know, it's I mean, it's not always good to be complained about, but you know, yeah. In certain contexts, it can be.
Well, I mean, somebody cared, so yeah, that's cool.
Yes, exactly. Yes, awesome. All right, so if you're live streaming our show, thank you. You can always find a link to the live stream at pwtorch.com in my TV reports at the top and bottom. PWTorch.com. I cover Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision throughout the week and do live coverage throughout the show. And the phone number, the link to live stream, and our email address is all listed there. You can also, if you're live streaming us now, call us 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558 when you call push 1. You can also email us at WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com, the aforementioned email, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Okay, Javier, Judgment Day continues to be a huge part of Raw, and I continue to enjoy it. Rhea Ripley was not my number one pick to be the leader of a group of wrestlers that includes late 30s Damian Priest, 40-something Finn Balor. I think I'm getting their ages right. And there's a lot of things unexpected about this faction, especially with some early reviews being pretty negative about them, although I was on the softer side of the criticism, I think, of them very early on. But Rhea Ripley today really exerting her leadership, showing frustration. I think the way people are acting in this faction feels authentic. You know, in the pro wrestling context, I thought Dom showed a little bit more range this week, showing a little nervousness when Ripley gets upset and that kind of thing. I thought Priest being exasperated, J.D. McDonough's played his role well. Just talk about the Judgment Day and where you are with them in terms of the amount of TV time they're getting and how you think they're progressing as an act.
Well, one of the ones that stood out to me was Dominic and how he took a back seat to this since he's not like the focal point. And he was able to take enough of a back seat where, you know, he's not, you know, because people like booing him and stuff like that. But, you know, he's just like the what was the line that he said in Spanish? He said, oh, you pissed her off. when she flipped out, and she says, I'll deal with it. And he's like, ooh, you pissed her off. And then when they were trying to make him make the decision, I love the fact that, you know, he doesn't wear the pants, so he had to turn to her, and he's like, you know, and he's like, mommy,
totally.
Please help.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, mom, you know, so it was like the little subtle things, and he wasn't like really the focal point, but I really dug that, and when you see that in the actors involved, that, you know, they know the character they're playing with and how they would react, even if they're not, you know, even when they're there just to enhance the scene that they're in the middle of. And yeah, I mean, the just like the relationship between the frustration that they show, and they're doing a really good job. You know, they really know the characters that they're playing. They really know how they would, you know, they play off each other very well. They play off the situation very well. I'm sure Balor's going to be having nightmares of that Money in the Bank briefcase, as he seems to get hit with it every single show he's on. And then, like, you know, the relationship with Balor and JD, you know, like he's stepping out on them. And that's what Priest said, you know, he's been sneaking out, talking to that idiot. That's what he had said in Spanish when he was there. So there's the frustration with that. I think they're doing a really good job with it. It's a bit much to carry a 3-hour show as opposed to, like, a, you know, the Bloodline storyline carrying a 2-hour one. But, you know, other than that, you know, it does a good job.
Yeah. So where does the Priest JD McDonagh situation go? Does JD get integrated at the insistence of Ripley? Does Priest just end up not part of the group before JD gets invited in? Like, what kind of options do they have that you like, and where do you think they're heading with it?
That's a hard one, because I knew you were going to ask that question, so that's what I've been thinking the entire show.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I don't really know, because, I mean, you would assume that any kind of split means that one side's going to be babyface, one side's going to be heel. I don't see them do Rhea and Dominic as babyfaces in the near term, which means the most likely thing is that at some point Priest is the one who either leaves on his own volition, or he's the one who gets kicked out, and JD takes his place. That's probably the one, just based on, you know, face, you know, the face heel dynamic is the one that makes the most sense, because the other one would be Finn leaves and joins JD, and then would they be faces, or does Judgment Day become face? Is your other, like, you know, real option, again, if you're going to keep a face heel dynamic, because I think if, like, you just break them up as into two heel groups, that could work. But I think you get more out of it if there is a, you know, a payoff with the babyface, like Priest, you know, taking on the group. I'm thinking that, because since we're heading to Judgment Day, that, you know, the faction becoming at least temporarily five people, you know, would kind of make sense if they're planning on doing, like, a War Games kind of scenario.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Very good. Well, let's go to our first caller here and see where this leads us. We'll go to Kyle in Baltimore first. Kyle, thanks for calling. What's in your mind about Raw tonight?
Yeah. So a few things for me. So first, the fact with having, now have Becky and Trish to steal Kane's match at Payback, which is fine. It needs for you to be over with. Can wait till it's over with. Becky and Zoe is one more into someone now, because I'm more of that type of that match, that type of feud kind of trees. Maybe looking forward to their false winning or match next week. But so the thing now for this, hopefully being the final time they'll face each other, and then also with having Rhea and Raquel having each other for Payback as well, is that now that we now finally get to see more of these women on Raw. They're kind of disappointed with tonight anyway, with how they've been treating the women with having these 5-second matches. What do you think about those two matches for Payback? And you think because of their views they've been having for the last few weeks, they're going to settle them? It'll be finally done for both of them. Well, lastly, mainly the Becky Trish thing, because the Raquel Rhea thing just happened out of nowhere. What do you think about that? Those two matches for Payback.
Yeah, Javier, I'll throw to you first. Comment on that.
Which was the first match?
Kyle, which one do you want to analyze first of the two?
The Becky Trish stuff and finish with that feud and have Becky move on, because this has been really annoying. And then also with Becky facing Zoe next week as well, that false counting anywhere match.
Yeah.
More looking forward to all of that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, order doesn't matter, I guess.
I mean, the Becky Trish, let me just talk about the segment today where I think they killed it, like, and not in a good way. So I, too, am kind of like, okay, let's move on with that. I'm not feeling Zoe yet, so hopefully they have like a good, you know, some sort of, you know, they have a good match next week. And yeah, I'm kind of with Cal on that, but I mean, I'm a little bit split because I do like Trish overall, but I think because of the, you know, some of the injuries with that slowed some stuff with Trish's broken nose, the fact that, you know, the match felt like it was going to be in SummerSlam, and I know a lot of people were complaining about that. Crap, damn, I haven't been around, I haven't talked since SummerSlam. So, you know, that,
damn,
you know, but, yeah, I mean, it felt like, and I agree with that, that match not being on the SummerSlam card because it just didn't feel like the
we wanted a 5.5-hour show. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
That and the fact that it didn't feel like the feud was, like, hot at that point. So it feels like it's a little bit better now that, you know, you have the steel cage match stipulation that works with, you know, trying to keep Zoe out of it. You know, so I am ready for it to, it didn't click. I don't think this ever like really clicked. I wish it did, but I don't think the whole feud ever really did it. And, you know, like Becky's been saying, you know, they're trying to make Lemonade, you know, trying to make a lemonade out of lemons. So,
yeah, I'll just interject this, but I've been higher on Trish and her performance pretty consistently than I think average. I thought Jason Powell and his report was kind of down on it tonight. Maybe my expectations were pretty low, so maybe that has something to do with it. But I mean, you could kind of see the insult to Quebec City coming, and it was localized. But I think it makes more sense when it's localized when a heel is coming to their home country, and then, you know, kind of pulling the rug out from under the fans who might think that she's going to be that she's going to like them like Bret Hart did. The Becky talking about not wanting championships, but or being remembered for surviving as opposed to wins, losses, and championships is, you know, it's her way of framing what's happening now as, you know, important when maybe it might be framed as unimportant or a downgrade for her. I think it's working more for me than it is, especially for you, Kyle, because it sounds like you really want them to move on. But I kind of have been pleasantly surprised by this. And I also just, I think we have to remember too, when Becky's in the world title picture constantly, it can get repetitive. Now, I will say Becky being a babyface consistently 4 years with no turns and holding a title for a very long time in a Roman Reigns way, to me sounds like a better way to portray her if she was available full time for that. But when she is available, I think having her on top as champion as a babyface is my first choice. But I think this has allowed for some freshening up of things. And I think Becky and Trish is sort of a match if we didn't get it, or a feud if we didn't get it, but we saw Trish doing this with others, we might kind of think it would be good and maybe preferable to the other option. Javier, do you want to reply to that at all?
Yeah, okay. I mean, I like the concept of the whole feud, and I like the whole, you know, the idea behind it. It felt like they were off key throughout the entire like build to this. I've also been like pleasantly surprised with most of Trish's promos. I just thought that today the first part, she felt like she was repeating herself too much, like if she had lost her place and was trying to find it, and then, you know, went into the thing, and then when she got into the ring, that part of the promo was really good, but then again it felt like she got off of it, and then there was a moment where it felt like she was supposed to feed Becky a line and forgot.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, yeah. Becky like goes to cut into it, and then she remembered. And but, so that whole thing, you know, like there was a segment in the middle that was, you know, of that segment that felt like it was good. And it was like, oh, yeah, OK, because when it started, it was like, oh, man, you know, Trish is like reverted back to what, you know, when I was really negative, of, you know, or the majority of people were negative with her. But then she got better. But then, like, again, it just felt like maybe she forgot a line and then it threw her off. That was my critique of this specific segment. The thing is that it kind of feels there's been like a lot of steps, you know, kind of like that, where it never really felt like, you know, when you said, man, Trish and Becky for SummerSlam, you'd be like, oh, awesome, I want to see that. And then it just kind of like as we got closer, and again, part of it also was, you know, with her broken nose, and she probably would have been more involved physically, you know, in different parts leading up to the SummerSlam part of it. But yeah, I mean, I like the idea of it better than how the execution ended up. And as far as like what Becky was talking about, I think it was like, I think it was a way to defend the fact that she is not in the title picture. and not like not only not in the title picture, but not being on SummerSlam, I think is more along the lines of saying like, hey, look, I'm, you know, kind of like almost framing herself as she's a special attraction. Is kind of like what it felt like. It's similar like
yeah.
to how, you know, Undertaker, you know, by all means should have always been involved in the main event. But, you know, during his career, he spent a lot of his time dealing with other stuff, yet still being an important part of the show. This kind of felt like that's what she was trying to tell us, was like, yeah, hey, look, I'm not always going to be in the championship picture, probably for a lot of it, but I'm – because I have enough cachet that I don't need to be into the title picture. So that could be your A1, you know, so the title picture could be your women's A story, and I'm going to be your 1A story. You know, that kind of thing is what I think she was kind of going for.
Kyle, do you want to reply to any of that about the Trish Becky match, and then we can talk about story.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm not saying for Becky to be champion again. All I'm saying is that for her to just be in a credible feud that's been because I wasn't really all that high with this feud to begin with when it started. I thought it was going to be like, of course, a one off with whole Trish and Lita stuff, but it's kept going on and on and on. So that's why it's dragging. So I'm not saying for Becky to be in a championship picture. I'm just saying for her to be in a credible feud. And so far right now, that's credible for Becky right now as the top heel is Rhea Ripley. So that's the other problem. The other problem that is, you know, they're doing a terrible job building up these women. I feel like too, because you had tonight having Rhea just dominate Candice in a very quick match. You know, I guess it's fine. Rhea is the champion. She should be dominant, but these quick women's matches I haven't been a fan of these last few weeks or months at this point. And what do you think in terms of for Raquel herself and in terms of her being, because, you know, she had come out smiling again, she came out more serious. I think that's a good thing for Raquel. Do you think now that with what do you expect within this match and free with Raquel and Rhea, and how you want to see Raquel changing her character with her serious side?
Javier, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, my issue with Raquel has been, because, you know, since I've seen her as both as a babyface and as a heel, I don't, you know, there's something there, but something just ultimately does not end up convincing me. You know, part of the problem is, you know, the way she acts as a baby face with the, you know, Tom Martin's mentioned, you know, calling people Chiquita and, you know, stuff like that. You know, and yeah. And the fact that, you know, she does the, you know, she's going to, when she faces, Rhea Ripley, you know, she's going to come out and do the posing stuff, which is, you know, it just takes me out of, you know, out of the character, particularly, you know, since she wants revenge and the, you know, for hurting Liv Morgan and, you know, and almost taking her out too. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, I want to like her. I really want to like her, but, you know, she's big. So that's hard for a babyface, you know, when she, you know, dwarfs her opponents and is much more strong, much stronger than your opponents. So, you know, a heel could possibly be better. I think I liked her the best when she was somebody's heater, you know. So I don't know. I really have a hard time. I really want to like, you know, and there's something there. And I think that eventually it'll click and she'll be, you know, on the same, or at least hope, she'll be on the same level as Rhea Ripley. But I don't think, you know, I think she's got to find out who she is and what will work for her.
And yeah, I definitely think there's a journey that she's on. I think I'm confident she'll kind of find that, but I don't think it's been – I don't think WWE has helped, but I also think it was going to take time for her anyway. I get why they want to push her. I get why they want to figure out how to utilize her and get her into a top star position. There's a lot she has going for her, but for the reasons you said, there's a little bit of a conflict between the face and heel, and is she ready for a big push or not? And she's going to need to have a breakout match, and she needs to have a breakout match in terms of crowd reaction and in terms of the story that they tell in the ring and the story that she tells through body language and run-ins, but also on the microphone. And I don't know how long of a journey that's going to be, but I'm definitely not giving up on her, Kyle. I think she's, you know, worth investing in. And I don't know that spending more time in NXT would have necessarily accelerated things. It just would have had a smaller audience as she figured things out. Kyle, anything else on that or something else?
Yeah, I mean, I remembered too from Raquel being a heel on NXT. It was because it was the reverse where Rhea was the baby face and Raquel was the heel in their in time in NXT. So and I think in somebody's award for her in NXT as a heel, I think unfortunately for her being a main roster, it just hasn't clicked with her as a baby face. So I don't know that if they just show her side as more serious and more with that edge as a baby face, they will help her more instead of keep smiling every time she comes out there. So maybe that will work. But I'm looking forward to the match, though. I think it'll be fun. I was even really talking about the Shinsuke Rollins match and feud and what Shinsuke had to say about him having knowing about Rollins' back injury from years ago before he was a target that headed into their match at Payback. I just thought all of that was really interesting. And I was like, and I was kind of glad they had subtitles too, because I was like, I'd be like, what is this guy saying? It's what do you think though about that promo that Shinsuke did, and what do you think about the match itself? How they build it up for Payback and involving the back injury with Seth? How you feel that? And what do you think that's going to go in the future with Seth Rollins in his championship run, knowing that he has an injured back? Do you think he's going to lose it to Damian Priest at some point whenever he catches in because of the injury? What do you think about that entire segment with Shinsuke and Seth?
Yeah, so we did kind of talk about that a little bit, I think, before you called in. Javier, anything you want to add in terms of some of the specifics Javier brought up? I'm not quite sure if he brought anything up that my questions didn't also cover, but maybe there was something.
Well, I mean, this is not really the kind of story that WWE does all that often, but it's something that I would like to see, similar to what they're doing with Orange Cassidy over on AEW, where he's being worn down with injuries because he's been, you know, fighting constantly. If they could do that story with Seth Rollins, where he survives Shinsuke, but now there's blood in the water, and then it becomes an ongoing storyline. With people targeting his back and that being an issue for him going forward with all of his opponents, not just Shinsuke. And that ultimately being what ends up, you know, breaking him, and causing him to lose whenever, let's say Gunther at that point is ready to take the title from him and Gunther just breaks him. That would be a neat story, you know, long-term storyline that they could plan out for Seth Rollins. They just don't do that too often in, you know, like that, but maybe that might be what we're seeing now, because, you know, it feels like, you know, Hunter is putting a little bit more it feels like more of his fingerprints are on this right now.
Yeah, and I think with everything going on with Vince and Vince backing away again, through a mix of resignation, choice, and force, part of it is like confirmation bias. Oh, Hunter's got less of Vince interfering now, a lot less, and less of an influence. And then you kind of look for the things that are there. But I do think that is happening. Kyle, anything else you want to bring up?
I think that's what we're talking about. This is the Judgment Day about, you know, for them. I'm intrigued what they're going to be doing at Payback. You know, they're on the cover on the show. You would think they'll have some type of major role with Finn Balor and Damian Priest, and I'm just intrigued. What are they setting up for them for Payback? Because are they gonna do a Splitsville? Are they gonna have them going to face each other at the show and replace them with JD Mendetta? How's that going to play out for the Judgment Day for all this tension between Balor and Priest?
Javier, do you want to add anything to that?
No clue. One of my gut reactions is if Survivor Series is going to have War Games, it this feels like the most likely faction would be, you know, some sort of permutation of the people involved with the Judgment Day, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and Cody. That kind of feels like, you know, how many members are you? Is it four per side or is it five per side usually for War Games, Wade?
Five.
Five, yeah. So
But I think they've done four. I think they've done four too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, like, it could be that Priest ends up joining them. So you have who it would be: Dominic, JD, Finn, maybe somebody else. I don't know. And then, you know, and then Priest on the other side, or, you know, and maybe and they could end up like actually finally having their full on breakup at War Games. It's probably, I think, what would be, you know, if I were betting, what I would put it on. So I think, but what they're planning for Payback, I have no clue.
Yeah. Kyle, we talked about that earlier. I don't know the pace at which they're going to do this. And I think they have like multiple options, and I don't, I'm just going to rush in this, and Balor's going to break away with JD. And then there's going to be tension, you know, with Rhea and Priest and Dominic, but they're going to be Judgment Day. And then other times I think, no, Priest is going to break away. My thinking now is they're going to actually keep them together for a while. And they're going to play off this tension. They're going to learn from the Bloodline that you can really draw these things out and tell stories. Yeah. And so, yeah, you're kind of, sounds like you're verbally nodding along to that.
Yeah, I see that point then. So I guess my final play that I'll let you guys do this is that for Tommaso Ciampa, you know, he's been posting on Twitter and that trying to fight Gargano. So what do you think there? That's going to how long are you going to play this up with Tommaso Ciampa trying to fight Gargano, all this stuff, and how is that going to play out in the next coming weeks or so, or month or so? What do you think how they're going to bring back Gargano if, you know, this whole tension, this whole finder thing that Tommaso Ciampa is doing. We think that's leading to, but that's a short call.
Thanks, Kyle. Javier, do you want to see Gargano mixed with Ciampa again? Is that like, it's Matt, you know, it's when they're at their best, and of course you should do it and try to get something on the big stage going with them? Or do you think it's better either temporarily or indefinitely or forever to not remix them because Gargano might be damaged goods? And this seemed like a promo tonight to try to elevate Ciampa, which again was one of the moments that jumped out. I'm like, oh yeah, this might be a sign that even if there wasn't news about McMahon, you know, stepping back more now, we'd be thinking, oh, you know, Levesque had some say so over this, because it seems like he is more, he's seen Ciampa at his best and knows what he can get out of him.
Well, I mean, we were getting DIY. He said it in the promo.
Oh God, did I miss that? Oh, I feel bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because he actually finishes a promo where he says, you know, I came this close, but I figured that sometimes you just have to do it yourself, and he walked out.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought it was – not that that isn't pretty obvious and I shouldn't have caught it, but, like, it didn't go through my head. No wonder. All right.
Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, he called it. Yeah, and so whether we want it or not, it's happening. And it just – it's funny to me because, like, the way I picture this is Triple H just, like, walking in, like, looking over his shoulder, making sure Vince – has nowhere around. It's like, okay, maybe they'll put, you know, maybe they'll put Gargano for like this one promo, because you remember a while back he cut up, you know, they had a video package for Gargano and he disappeared because, you know, it's like, oh, you know, Vince is still around, and now he's like, keeps testing the waters. It's like, okay, I think it's safe now. That's kind of like what,
yes,
the whole thing,
yes,
feels
that's a good
like
way to put it. Yes, totally.
You know, so yeah, I'm expecting Gargano to come in. You know, and I'm expecting them to reunite DIY. The only thing is that we need a tag team division.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's that.
So, you know, that is where my greater concern is. I'm sure we'll get some great skits if they're just going to do skits between the Gargano family with Tommaso Ciampa as like kind of like the straight guy, but, you know, that also be a waste for him. But, you know, and the plus side is that Gargano has been away long enough that you can, you know, do a slight repackaging when he comes back, particularly if he's coming back with Ciampa, you know. So, yes. I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic is the way I would.
Yeah. Do you think Gargano is damaged in a way that DIY fixes, or that it pulls Ciampa down? Like, what do you think went wrong with Gargano?
I think ultimately I think the biggest issue was the fact that they brought him in expecting everybody in that everybody knew who he was out of NXT, when NXT has a much smarter audience. I think really that, and I think that there are a lot of wrestlers who kind of had that issue where they were not properly reintroduced to the And I mean, and granted, that's been an issue with wrestlers that come over from NXT over to the main roster constantly, because it almost feels like they develop, the characters develop in NXT, and then it's like, okay, you're the finished product, and we're just going to transfer you, for you as a finished product, never really do anything. And that was, I think, the biggest issue was for me, I think, was like Johnny Gargano was being very like standoffish, very like, I've already arrived, kind of. Like, you know, the character that he was playing, I think, would have worked out a lot better in NXT as like the Elder Statesman, but it felt like he came in as the Elder Statesman when you're just introducing him to the WWE audience. I think that just completely failed at that point.
All right. Very good. Let's give out the number again and then get to our next call. If you want to join the show right now, the number is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. We'll go to Brad from Florida next. Brad, welcome to the show. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, guys. No, it's funny that you bring that up, Javier, about the NXT people being introduced, because, you know, almost all of the NXT people who have, I don't want to say gotten over, but, you know, Zoe Stark, I think people think pretty highly of her because she's been paired with Trish. I would even argue that a big launching point for LA Knight and his success was, you know, obviously being paired with Bray Wyatt. I think he did a lot of it himself. But I think it's really a lot about who you get paired with and who, like I feel like, for instance, if you had Gargano mixed up with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in a tag team feud and they were heels or something like that, like, you might get a little bit more out of, like, you might have gotten more out of Gargano than bringing him in as this baby face and people are saying, well, why do I need to love him or whatever. I just feel like a lot of, like, the NXT people getting over has to do with who they get paired with. I do think it's going to work for JD McDonagh, because I was thinking of that watching the end of tonight. Like, I do think it makes him instantly more important just being paired with the Judgment Day and, you know, then maybe, you know, a normal, regular NXT person coming in would be. So I was just thinking about that with JD McDonagh. And how do you think this is going to play out with him specifically? Because obviously he was kind of ingratiating himself, and then tonight he screwed up. I mean, do you think this eventually leads to him getting into the group? Because it almost has a Sami Zayn wanting to be with the cool kids, Roman Reigns vibe, in obviously a much more minor way. But it does kind of have a little bit of that effect, and I wanted your guys' thoughts on that.
Javier. JD McDonagh is an example of what Brad brings up that I think will be referred to for a while, which is when you get dropped into things, where do you get dropped and how does that affect your perception, what you're able to do? Do you get to find down first and rebuilt or otherwise? How do you think this serves him? And you can explore more, less him, just specifically Judgment Day, but maybe, you know, years down the line, how what this puts him on a track for.
Well, with JD, I was already intrigued when he showed up in a cameo, basically, you know, watching the Judgment Day. I'm not sure if it was the entire Judgment Day or just Finn Balor, like, because he was standing like high up and looking down. I'm like, oh, you know, this is interesting. They have shared heritage, you know, and didn't Balor? I think Balor trained was one of the people that trained JD.
Yeah.
I think.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, so they gave us enough there to understand that, okay, this is a guy from Finn Balor's past, and we all have people in our past, so it's something that was easy for us to glom onto when it came to JD McDonagh. And the thing is that I JD McDonagh never really did anything for me when I was watching the stuff I saw, because I stopped watching NXT a while ago, but I had seen some of him. He never really caught my attention. And it wasn't until now that he actually caught my attention, because it's like, oh, this guy's Finn's little buddy. I'm like, okay, so how's that going to be how does that change the relationship between, you know, the various members of the Judgment Day? So there was already something meaty there in that character that, you know, for me to, you know, glom onto, you know, to see, okay, so let's see what happens. And it's interesting because he hasn't really sold like he wants to really be part of the group. He just wants to be around with Finn. So so he could act as either both, you know, coming into the group or tearing Finn away from the group, which, you know, creates an interesting dynamic, and I don't think we're going to know what it is until that ends up playing out. So, because, I mean, I guess it's just both ways, where he tears Finn from the group, and you have a tag team of JD and Finn, or, you know, JD you'd also do the whole thing, because remember how did Balor come into the group? He killed Edge, and it could be that JD ends up coming into the group and replacing Finn is another possibility too. Ends up betraying, you know, his mentor figure or what have you. So, but that's the thing. Everything I talked about is like, you know, the imagination of like where JD can go. And there are a lot of people, you know, that have come in. Like, I don't have that imagination with Zoe Stark right now. Like, okay, where can Zoe go right now? It's cool that she's involved with Becky because that's a big time program for her. So that tells me outside of the storyline that they're interested in her, so I am going to pay attention to her just for that respect. But I don't really know who her character is and, like, what her real motivations are, because she's just, like, you know, hanging out with Trish, and they don't really have a real history. So I think that there's, like, two different, like, ways I see, you know, two relative newcomers, where one of them feels like he's been integrated well with the story, while the other one feels like they're just telling us that, hey, these two, you know, she likes Trish, and that's why they're hanging out.
I will say, as far as JD goes, Brad, I think he's earning his keep by being dropped into what I would think is fairly characterized as a pretty significant and successful faction right now. I think there's subtlety to his acting. By the way, I did not like Cody Rhodes' comment about his head being too big for his body. I mean, I don't know. It felt like kind of a cheap shot. It was sort of judgy. And it kind of like, well, that's not a character flaw. That's just physically how he grew up to be.
That's genetics.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not something you can control, you know?
Yep.
If we're constantly bobbing his head up and down, then you say, okay, he's a bobblehead. You know, that is something you control, you know? But yeah, I thought about that when he said that. I'm like, I could hear Wade just cringing at the line.
Yes. Yes. I think JD's doing, I said that in the context of saying, I think JD is rising to the occasion. I think he's fitting in. I think his acting, his body language, you know, reading his face, his timing is right where it needs to be for this. And so to have Cody come out there and kind of, you know, do what the authority did to Daniel Bryan, I just think wasn't good judgment, and I don't really see the reason for it.
Yeah. That's something that, like, now you're looking for it too.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I think that more is, you know, I'd probably be more okay with it if he were his target, like if they had been feuding for a while, kind of thing. And they've been going at it and getting really personal, dirty, you know, JD's talking about, you know, Brandy, that sort of thing, you know, and you start getting much more personal. Okay, fine. But that kind of felt like an offhanded comment that you say to someone that the way he came across is like Cody saying like, oh, this guy's beneath me, you know, and I don't think that was like the best, particularly when this is like somebody trying to, you know, somebody new you're trying to get over.
Brad, back to you. I think you had something to say on that too.
Yeah. Wait, I'm actually glad you brought that up, because I didn't like that either from Cody with the big head comment. It's not because – it was just like – it's not like a babyface thing to say. Like, it's just not, you know, something – it's like something like a jerk in high school would say about another kid who isn't cool, as cool as them or something. You know, like, oh, look at the big head,
totally.
Too big for his body. And there was also some other weird stuff, like on commentary, like Michael Cole at the beginning of Raw when the Judgment Day came out, he goes – oh, get a look at these losers. Now, I understand what his point was, like, oh, how dare they interrupt. But losers, I don't think, is the vernacular that you want to use for your, you know, your heel faction that supposedly runs, quote-unquote, WWE and runs Monday Night Raw, quote-unquote. I think it's like a little, you know, like, you don't want to say that about them. And the truth is, Michael's right, because they have been losers, and they've been losing every single big match. They've lost every single main event that they've been in for the last X amount of weeks. They're not looking like winners to me. and they're not looking as dangerous. And I don't know if you guys feel like that's a problem. Like, I kind of think it is, because I think if you think they're just going to come out there every week and just lose at the end of every Raw, lose their match. I mean, I know last week they were, you know, putting people through tables and stuff, and but they don't win. You know, Finn Balor doesn't win. They haven't won any of these ending matches. I don't know in how long the Raw ended with them winning something. So I didn't really like that comment at all. And I also, you know what else I didn't like, honestly, is if I'm in that crowd and I'm seeing a tag team title match, I'm about to see potentially the title change hands. And I understand that's not what that crowd wants to see, because they're, you know, Sammy and KO could have sat in the middle of the ring and played Scrabble and they would have cheered for it. Like, you know, this is like their hometown. This is, everyone loves them. But like at the end of the day, like I would have rather seen the tag team title match than the six man that means nothing. And I just didn't like,
I think it was a non-title match, by the way. I'm pretty sure. I don't think they, Javier.
Oh, it was?
Right on that?
Yeah, it was not a title match.
So that takes a little bit of the sting away from the DQ.
Too. Yeah, I'm not 100% sure, but I don't remember
that they shine a lantern on. You know, yeah. I mean, they're okay if people think that. You know, they don't go, fans, we want to emphasize this match means less because the title's not on the line.
Right. Right. Well, whatever. I just kind of did feel like, well, I guess it kind of takes a little bit of my point away, but I thought it was for the titles. I don't know why. I guess I just did. But it's just the Judgment. Do you guys think the Judgment Day losing every single match is a problem? And, you know, and do you think that Cole's loser comment, like, I don't know, do you think that they're starting, like, they're trying to portray them as losers so they do break up and it's not as big of a deal? Because I don't know what Raw does without them.
It hopefully goes back to 2 hours, because they are filling a lot of TV time well. Javier, how much I catch myself sometimes hearing other people talk about wins and losses. This even goes back to even Cena and other eras, where it's like, look at it through the lens of, oh, they're losing too much. I mean, there's times where clearly it matters. But I don't know how many people are wrapped up in what Brad brings up. And I think that's a good thing. You can tell stories, and it's, to me, like when it's a big match, one-on-one, and you have a series of matches and you just always come up short. That's one thing. But TV matches and, you know, losing, but there's all kinds of shenanigans and distractions and other things going on. I just don't know if that counts in a way that would define or hurt the Judgment Day in the way that Brad is expressing, I guess, concern about.
Well, it's that whole thing that you could always get your heat back. There's some people who always, you know, you could just beat them and then they'll always get the heat back. Like, you know, the Miz. Like, you know, Miz could lose every match from here on out, and people still want to see him get beat. You know, that kind of thing. To address specifically the loser remark that Cole said, I would normally not have an issue. Well, okay, had this been like before last week, I would have been fine with that comment, because, you know, essentially these are like, you know, they feel like, you know, these are grown ass adults walking around like, you know, they're high school kids, they're high school bullies. So I could totally see him, you know, calling them, you know, losers with that in that respect. Right. But with how the last week ended, it felt like, you know, with them laying everybody, you know, laying everybody out and all of them standing united in the ring, it felt like they went from being what was a mid-card act to actually being a main event act, that act that they did. So I think it was bad timing for him to actually say, call them losers as they were coming into the ring. And yeah, I mean, as far as them losing the matches, I would have to go back and watch all the matches, but I think like the matches I remember, most of the matches that were lost by Dominic, and, you know, And it's Dominic, so you kind of, you know, get it. That's kind of like his purpose there, is to be the guy to take the losses for the team, for the faction. And the other losses have been from Balor because of screw-ups to create the tension between Priest and Balor. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of why I haven't really even noticed the fact that they've racked up a bunch of losses, because they've all been to tell a story, and since I'm engaged in the story, I haven't like taken the 100-foot, you know, the bird's eye view of the of how many, you know, losses and stuff like that, because and which ones were like important ones. So I don't know, like, you know, like when they wrestled Edge, I don't remember how that ended last time because it's been already, you know, so far back. But the losses that Balor has, you know, the ones that have been involving the briefcase, that, you know, telling a story, and the ones for Dom, it's telling a story. But then on the other hand, you have Rhea Ripley winning all her matches. So, you know, and she's the leader, and she's more like the face and the one that we see. And I'm not sure I can't even remember what the Priest has been doing lately, but he's carrying around that briefcase, which means that, you know, he's a threat to cash in at any time. So that's why I'm like not too worried about, you know, the individual losses at this point.
Yeah, thank you guys. And my last thing is just on the Shinsuke Seth thing. Like, whatever. I know you have to put believability aside, but it's kind of like an odd thing for me to believe that Shinsuke is the only person in WWE who knew about Seth's back. And I mean, I guess it's fine, whatever. It's not the end of the world, but it is interesting what Seth said in the backstage thing where he said, you know, like, I don't know how much longer I can keep doing this at a high level, which is kind of a weird thing to say. I don't know how real that is or not real that is. Maybe you have some insight on that, but it makes me think they're setting him up to drop the title. And do you think they want to give Shinsuke the honor of a belt and a championship? And I just wonder if it sets up an opportunity for Priest to cash in on it, even if Shinsuke does win it and he just cashes in on Shinsuke really quickly or something like that, only because I'm a little unsure of that aspect, only because Seth and Priest really have nothing going on together right now. There's no sort of interaction right now between those two, and Seth or Shinsuke and Priest. But I just wanted to know what you guys thought of that particular comment by Seth, and is there anything really to it, and do you think that that's showing a weakness that will lead to him ultimately losing this title at Payback to Nakamura?
I don't think he's going to lose the title, but I think the mention of the back of here is just specifically designed to close that gap a little bit to create some doubt. And I think that's smart to do that. You know, I think a booker, a promoter, wrestlers who are cognizant of fan perception that the outcome is inevitable, sprinkling in some X factor that creates some doubt is smart booking. And I don't think fans are deconstructing it always when they do that. They're just like, oh, I thought Seth was going to win for sure, but now I don't. I think there's a lot of people who are like that, who now think, ah, Nakamura knows something and now he's going to exploit it, and Seth has confirmed it and admitted it. And I think that adds some drama to their match or matches.
Yeah, I mean, unless he legit is injured and has to take time off. That's the only other, you know, explanation. You know, like, that's the only way I could actually see Nakamura actually win it, and even win it, and then Priest getting it in some way, shape, or form. I think that if they are going to make the back a thing, I think they're just going to just extend it. Like, that's going to be Rollins' story going forward. And they, also keep in mind that they kind of have to build up that belt still. And I think if, you know, and this is kind of like what he's been doing, if you just have Seth Rollins at every pay-per-view wrestle a different opponent, so he basically, you know, he you know, instead of having, you know, a feud last 3 months, each of his opponents is like 1 month, maybe, you know, a show here and there, and he takes on like a whole, you know, basically take on the whole roster. The entire roster challenges him at some point for the title. And then this be what, you know, wears him down. And, you know, ultimately, what I personally would love to see is basically him start getting worn down, and then to the point where Gunther at some point loses the Intercontinental, Gunther challenges him, and then he basically Apollo Creeds him, Rocky IV Apollo Creeds him, and just like kills Rollins, wins the title, and then Rollins goes away for a while to sell, you know, his injury, and then, you know, and then come back and go after Gunther, because I of everybody on the roster on Raw, I think Gunther is right now the one I would like to see most likely dethrone Seth Rollins. I think, you know, a lot of people would also agree with that.
Brad, back to you.
Wow, and did you guys hear what Miz was saying to Tozawa to LA Knight when he was in the ring as he was kicking Tozawa? He's going, my space. And then he's looking at LA Knight and he kicks Tozawa. And then he goes, beanie babies. And he kicks Tozawa in the face. he was saying like all these like played out fad things that no one cares about anymore. Again, like, and I love LA Knight, but the only, and that was really funny. But the one thing about the LA, like, I feel like tonight, like, you're getting close to starting to play it out a little bit. Like, LA Knight was saying yes so much, obviously, which is fine. But, like, when you have Tozawa doing it in the ring, like, yeah. Like, it's just, and then LA Knight said it so many times. Like, you know, and it's fine. Like, I think it's just something, like, where, like, you want to leave people thirsting to hear it. And, like, yeah, maybe you say it once or twice, but, like, tonight it was 15 to 20 times, and I just don't want to see it get played out. I really don't. And I think there's something to, you know, again, what Miz is saying, like, it's kind of like a shoot sort of thing. Like, he's really, you know, kind of telling it like it is. Like, these things do get played out fast, and I don't want that to happen. And I don't want them to overuse it. Like, you know what I mean? That's just the way I felt about that segment. And I'll let you guys talk about that if you want. And thanks for the thoughtful responses, and I'll listen to the rest.
Yeah.
And thanks, guys.
Thanks, Brad. That's what we're here for. I want to hear what Javier thinks about LA Knight and Miz. We haven't talked about the last few weeks, and, you know, kind of just Miz, you know, Miz is saying, in a way, what the authority would say on air about Daniel Bryan. He can't be the face of the company. Look at him. LA Knight's a fad. Fans are going to move on. Is that smart to just kind of own what people are thinking? Or were people not thinking that as much as maybe they picked up online and they're overreacting to that, Javier? And then even if they are overreacting or not, how do you think it's going to serve Miz and LA Knight individually and as a feud?
All right. Buckle down for this one, Wade. Okay.
I always do.
Okay. I think that normally this would be like that, what you're talking about, like this is the authority speaking through the character. I think that they know that people believe that, and I think they're doing it on purpose so that they can think that they're talking about the character. I think this is like I'm going to mispronounce it, but the Matryoshka doll. You know, where, you know, the Russian doll where you remove the Russian nesting doll. There we go. I'll just say it in English. kind of like, you know, trying to outthink things. Because, you know, like on the surface, it's like, okay, they're saying what we think, what people are thinking that we think, I think is what they're thinking. did that follow? Did you track that?
I think I did. I don't know if everyone did, but I think I know.
Okay, so I think that that's kind of the game that they're playing. And ultimately, like, whether you understood what I said or not, here's the important thing. They're putting LA Knight on two shows. He's the only one who's been showing up on both shows. And, well, with The Miz. The Miz, obviously, is his foil. So, I mean, you know, they're giving him exposure. So even if you were to think that, oh, we're trying, I mean, and it legit might be that they're trying to overexpose him to see if this, you know, people get tired of him. You know, and I think that is a, you know, if you're testing the waters to see, do we really have something, you know, like, you know, is he really a flavor of the month, or are people really going to stay with him? And, you know, so if you're putting him on both shows for that, I'm like, you know, I'm thinking like, well, if your A story is Bloodline or whatever, I'm not going to call it the Bloodline anymore because, you know, that seems to be splitting in different directions. But, you know, if your Roman Reigns Uso stuff is your A story, and then the Judgment Day is going to be your B story, you know, what do we have here? Can this be your C story, or is this really just a flash in the pan? You know, it's not a bad way. I don't think what they've been doing so far is a bad way to determine whether it really is or not. And I also have to say, as far as the yeah thing, I think that LA Knight's doing the world a service, hopefully replacing what with yeah. So I much prefer crowds chanting yeah after everything than chanting what.
So LA Knight, because of this, is better off or worse off in a month or two?
In a month or two, or is what you said?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we'll see how the crowds continue, going on with it. I mean, I noticed the guy when his music hit, and I don't know, because you know how like some people are like just acting, you know, like I hope I get caught on camera.
Yeah, for sure.
When his music hit, there was this one guy that looked like when he went like Elvis just walked into the building. that was in the audience. And I'm like, I don't know how much of that was legit and him over the top, but like, you know, if this guy had this, you know, speaking in, like, it seemed like the guy was about to start speaking in tongues or something. You know, when LA Knight came out, I'm like, okay, you know, there is a thing. And that was a hell of a pop when he came out. So, you know, and the thing is that what I really liked about him coming out is that he came out and just like threw tissues at him. And I'm like, and I haven't really been following super closely these last few weeks. I've mainly just, you know, had it on the background, so I haven't been catching details and stuff. But I was like, okay, did I miss something? Is that like a contract or something that he tore up? I didn't know what the papers. Then when he sat down, he's like, oh, you know, I gave him tissue papers because he's going to cry about it. I'm like, oh, that was beautiful. Because that was like a subtle thing that, like, you know, that, I don't know, it was a subtle thing on how he interacted with the story that they're telling, which is not something that you see way too often, you know, like those little details. So yeah, I mean, I'm curious to where this goes and then where they decide to take it from here. But it seems like the crowd are eating it up for now. And hopefully, you know, I do hope, you know, I mean, we'll see. Cause I mean, I've actually been, you know, following him since Impact, you know, when he had the dummy button. And I think that was a little bit over the top, but so far, so good.
What is his future? Like, I mean, is he going to be a flash in the pan, and is that a self-fulfilling prophecy, or whether they intend that or not, or wish for it or not, given any mixed feelings I have about him and his readiness to be at the top, or are people who are nervous about him now going to be happy a year and a half from now of what they got 18 months, at least, you know, 18 months from now, they're going to be happy with the path and the push he got?
My only concern with him is the age, to be honest, my biggest concern would be that, to me, what it feels like is that he feels like a throwback to a different era that people, you know, cause I mean, they keep, you know, he does model himself after, you know, the Rocks and the Stone Colds. I mean, he's, and that's not to say, you know, because I don't like saying, oh, he's nothing more than a Rock and a Stone Cold. Obviously not. But I mean, you know, a lot of wrestlers, you know, model themselves after, you know, and it feels like that's a niche that we haven't really had. That kind of character who's kind of like, you know, bombastic in that respect, the no attitude, no F's giving, you know, mm-hmm. kind of dude. So, I mentioned this like last time I was on that I really wish he were just on Raw because I think he has more room to grow there than he does on SmackDown.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Let's jump to an email. I just hit a button. I didn't know that could be hit on the switchboard here. There we go. Let's go to an email here and jump back to the Shinsuke thing. David said, from Ridgefield Park, New Jersey, says, "Hi, Wade and Javier. I do believe we just saw the heel Shinsuke that we should have seen all along. That video package was, in my opinion, the best work Shinsuke has done in his entire WWE run. Having him do most of the talking in Japanese made it all the more sinister for the few English things he said. My question is whether you guys think that all the talk about Seth back is giving him an out to lose and take some time off, or do you think it's more of him giving him a handicap to overcome to make the win mean more? Appreciate all you do, and everyone go VIP." Thanks, Dave. So the second part we covered. The first part, is this what we should have seen all along?
Yeah, I think we should have seen this from Asuka, from Io, from Kairi Sane, from Andrade, from Ray, from Dominic, from Raquel, from, you know, from every, I mean, obviously the some of those speak real, you know, English really well, Andrade is a good example because Andrade knows English, but his accent's so thick that it's hard to follow it. And I'm speaking as a Hispanic myself, so I would much rather just hear him cut a promo in his native language and then have that subtitled. I mean, granted, you can't do that when you're like in the middle of the ring, obviously, but I would much prefer that because you'll be able to get that person's, you know, actual like personality across, you know, easier. Now, Maybe this is just me because I watch everything, and if I'm watching like a foreign film, I'm watching it with subtitles. I do not like dubs, and you know my there's always the issue that you know some people are like, oh no, I didn't come to see a movie to read, you know. So okay, you know, so I but I mean these are promos that are like 5 minutes that are like you know ten you know like 5 minutes long. So you know, I mean that's kind of like where I'm at because I'd rather that than you know Asuka just basically just saying over and over again you're not ready for Asuka.
You got cut off there, but I think you.
Yeah, well, I mean that's my patented.
Gotcha. Yes. Yep. Yep. Very good. All right. Let's go to JB from Detroit. As long as I can remember, it's been a rule, but I still never understood the logic of why a DQ or a count-out wouldn't result in a title change. Doesn't that just incentivize the champion to cheat or hide outside the ring? Yeah, so we got an example of that. With so little honor, with so many heels, why don't they get counted out more often on purpose? Now, I know this wasn't a title match, but it's still the Gunther one, not the tag match. The Gunther one was, and it was a count-out. Now, I think with Gunther, it works, Javier, because he – takes such pride in his dominance of others. And this is, as they said, his first loss in a singles match since getting to WWE.
Yeah, this was not a case where he stayed out there to lose to protect his title. He was beaten out there. Well, I'm not going to say beaten. That happened more in the G1. But, you know, it was just that he couldn't answer the bell because he was on the other side of the thing. That's one of the reasons why the title doesn't change, you know, hands on that kind of scenario because, you know, what they've always called champion's advantage. And in a lot of cases, it exists specifically for that so that the babyface could win but not win the title. And that's kind of the whole purpose of that or, like, you know, getting yourself, you know, disqualified, you know, or stuff like that. Like, I mean, particularly Gunther, since, that was how, since he's about to beat Honky Tonk Man's record, that was, like, how, I mean, you know, I actually do have a lot of affection for Honky Tonk Man because that's how he would take a lot of shortcuts. And you would hate him because you'd want to see him lose. And, yeah, the babyface won, but, you know, he didn't win the title, and that would frustrate the hell out of you. As a matter of fact, first wrestling show I ever went to, Ed,
mm-hmm.
it was the Steiner Brothers versus Money Incorporated. Money Incorporated were the champions, and I got to see the Steiner Brothers win. Did not realize that they won by count out. I turned on WWE the next time, and I see that Money Incorporated is still the champions. I'm like, what the hell happened? And then that's when I realized, like, oh, you know, first off, it was a live show, so they're not going to do a title change, but they still gave me win. But you know, that was how they explained it away. So I guess I'm a lot more fond for that kind of thing, but. If, you know, a lot of heels take advantage of that. Like, you know, how many times The Miz goes to walk out and then the babyface has to go, you know, out and fish him. In a lot of cases, I don't see it as often anymore, but one of my favorite, like, heel tactics would be the heel would walk out. You know, he's in danger. He would take a powder. And then, you know, as the time's coming down, the babyface who wants to win the title has to bring the heel back into the ring. But then that's when the heel takes the advantage on the outside, like poking the eye or whatever, in order to take over on the outside and then, you know, take over the match that way. So it's just, you know, it's just a tool. The whole thing is a tool that in some cases I kind of wish they would use more, as long as you don't, in like what I said, where, you know, for the heel to take over instead of it being a distraction or, you know, stuff like that.
All right, number two, I appreciate it. Michael Cole actually bringing up the recent win-loss record in context to Tozawa's threat to Miz tonight. I actually thought, yeah, that Cole was fair. He touted Tozawa as best you can, his history, but also just said this is not exactly what Miz has been advertising. What do you think of the Tozawa sell by Cole and anything else on that angle and how it played out?
Yeah, it was much better than the last time we saw Tozawa, where I remember that Cole, I'm pretty sure it was, yeah, it had to have been Cole. It wouldn't have been Kevin Patrick. He did, but he basically tore into, you know, he's like, oh, yeah, he's just, you know he's a great athlete, but, man, he's a loser. Boy, I mean, he spent, like, a long time talking about how much of a loser that Tozawa was. I'm like, does he owe Cole money? But yeah, I thought that was, it was kind of fun, and I did like the Tozawa saying yeah, but like not the way, not selling it the way that not in the way that the LA Knight says it, and it's just, you know, it's just stuff to get under the Miz's skin. I just love it whenever you do little things like that to get under Miz's skin, because Miz sells those moments like great. I mean, he it's, you know. Super fun to watch him just like lose his mind like that.
JB also says, I do really enjoy the verbal sparring between Miz and LA Knight. They both are certainly holding their own, and they're always entertaining segments. Is there someone else do you watch this and go, it should have been someone else besides Miz with LA Knight at this moment in time?
I think it would have been Grayson Waller, but I don't want to put Grayson Waller in that, you know,
right.
position, you know,
yeah.
what I mean, right now. Build up Grayson Waller some more first. I think Miz, I mean, it feels like it's two of the older guys going at it, kind of. But it's fine for now. And so the other thing is, Miz also has a history of when he gets into quote unquote serious feuds of actually, you know, doing stuff like that. Because, you know, when he he had that promo setting up the stuff with Danielson, you know, he basically said the whole, you know, I'm a safe worker and look at you, you're retired, you know, and he hit, you know, stuff that was close to home every now and then when, you know, Miz does that too. So I can see that that's also why I think it's because since it's coming from Miz, you don't take it as seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. I have mixed feelings on it for that reason, but I think Miz has been good. I'm not a fan of, I have mixed feelings, and therefore I'm not a fan of just going all out with, hey, this guy's a fad and he's an Attitude Era derivative throwback and all that. But I think if they didn't want him to be over, they could have, I think they could have buried him more overtly if that was their goal. So I think that that's not their goal. I'm pretty sure it's not their goal, but I think they also are, like, I wonder how if there's, like, meta messages even being sent to LA Knight, like, we can write you off as this, and we are in control, and you need – we are not sure on you yet. So to save face, we're going to put out there in the public why maybe you don't get over, so it does, so we don't get blamed if, in the end, we don't think you're the right person to give the push to that the fans – so many fans want us to at this point. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, but that's what I was saying earlier. That's I think that their impression of what they want you to think, you know,
yeah.
That's kind of what I'm getting. Because, I mean, honestly, I think if they really wanted to bury him, they would have just had Cena do it.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, speaking of which, number four from JB. What do you think WWE has in mind for John Cena's return? Uh-oh. Perhaps an interaction with Grayson Waller if for whatever reason they felt like they missed with Theory and Cena back in Mania. They're not going to do Cena and LA Knight, obviously. So with LA Knight's role, they could team Cena and LA Knight. I don't know. But focused on Cena, that was JB's question. What do you think?
Yeah, Grayson Waller. I mean, granted, Grayson Waller's basically called out just about every single wrestler that's ever, you know, wrestled. I don't know at this point how much of it's a work, how much of it's stuff that we're working on, but plans fell through, you know, called out The Rock, called out, you know, everybody and their mother. I think it might end up being just for that, and then maybe wrestle Grayson Waller on the, you know, in the Indian tour.
Say that again. You my internet glitch. What tour? Sorry.
It probably wrestle a Waller in the Indian tour.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And he's got a movie coming out too. So, you know, and there's a writer strike. I mean, there's all kinds of things that could be inspiring this. And, but yeah, there's the internet. Cena does not want to miss out on a chance to show that he can speak the native language.
Ooh, you know what? That's actually kind of interesting. Now you mentioned the writer strike. I wonder if the WWE can promote the movie while Cena's there. Cause that might actually break the union thing. Because, I mean, Cena might not be talking about the movie, but if Cena's there and then they're promoting the movie, you could count that as a, you know, Cena's there to promote the movie. So, yeah it's interesting. Yeah, I've been following that rather closely, too. So.
Yeah, yep. What does WWE have in mind for John Cena's return otherwise? Yeah, I was thinking about this earlier today briefly and then got sidetracked because I was like, you know, trying to think of what makes sense with him because I don't want to see him just come in and just not be serious, you know, and just come in and kind of, oh, I got my own ideas, I'll just do this, and no one has the guts to say anything, but thank you for brushing us with your presence. But I'd like to see him – I'm going to put some thought on him because I'd like to see them actually utilize him in a way that helps somebody right now.
Yeah, I think it's good because with what – because Grayson Waller's been calling out like, oh, I made Edge relevant again. He got beaten by him. I think it might end up being something similar to that where Cena will hit him with oh man, what's the name of the move now? It used to be the FU. Wow, I'm getting old and forgetting. Mm-hmm. Attitude adjustment. You know, he hits him with that and then like he'll, you know, cause I don't think they're not like taping the Indian special, are they?
No.
Okay.
Not that I know of at least.
Yeah. I think that we'll just get a brush, he'll get a brush and then say, oh yeah, you know, this stuff. But, you know, in the Indian market, they'll actually see a match with him.
Yeah. All right. So then five, I wasn't a fan of Becky saying that her legacy wouldn't be defined by wins or losses or championships tonight. That should quite literally always be the point. In fact, I actually think that has been the reason why Becky hasn't gotten back to nearly the level that she was at before pregnancy. She's felt directionless at times. Javier.
That's not true. Mankind's legacy, Mankind, Nick Foley, you know, legacy determined on his wins and losses or what he did, you know, or what he did with himself. There are a lot of wrestlers who never won a championship. You know, Dan Marino, best quarterback of all time, he never won a championship. So, you know, they have a legacy. That's patently, you know, untrue. And I think the whole point of her actually saying that's what her legacy is going to be is more her coming to terms where that felt more like a shot at the actual management that I'm not going to be put in a position to carry the company forward. So instead, this is going to be my, you know. So I think there was a little bit more truth in that, or a little bit more shoot in that in the comment that she made than, you know, anything else, you know, going into it. But yeah, I mean, you could have a legacy that's not just about wins and losses.
Defense of it
I didn't hear anything you said. If there was it was a big period of
quiet. Who knows what's going on? Okay, so he said, I thought there were way too many localized Quebec City jokes tonight. I thought that Trish's promo was especially guilty of this and really came off as flat because of it. My defense of it is she's from Canada, and so a localized promo as a heel that pulls fans into thinking we're allowed to cheer you like it here and then not doing it. Well, it does not qualify as a pro wrestling cliche. It's enough of a twist on just going to a random city and insulting a local sports team. I put it in a separate category to be evaluated on separate criteria than the typical localized insults. I'll frame it that way and throw it to you.
Yeah, no, I agree with you putting it in a different category. I just thought it was just bad the way it was delivered.
Yeah.
It was because I think she did get lost. I think she got lost, and when she made the and you could tell there was no reaction when she took a shot at the she said, oh, at least the Maple Leafs made it through. There was no reaction to that. I just think it didn't. I agree with you because she's from there. Christian doing it when he went to where were they? Were they in Toronto when AEW went? The one that that Christian did, that sort of thing, where he's like the hometown person is like, oh yeah, or the Miz when he was in Cleveland, he's like, I'm glad I'm out of here, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's different because you're the hometown person turning your back on them. So, you know, like so, I agree with you in terms of the bucket, but I just thought it was bad.
Yep, fair enough. I get that. All right, number seven, I know that Payback isn't anywhere near a top-tier PLE, but I'm still surprised at the lack of announced matches we have at this point. I feel like they might have put Jimmy versus Jay on to give it a little bit of star power. I don't think Seth versus Shinsuke will be enough to carry it. I mean, this does seem to just be a way to mess with AEW more than a show that's needed on that at that time in the air, and they might not want to put a ton out there. What do you think, Javier?
I think they're so impressed by how AEW puts their card together at the last minute that they decided to try it themselves. Because, I mean, when I found out this is, what, in 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. I'm like, in 2 weeks? I have no idea what's going into this.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. All right. And finally, do you think that Seth's injury announcement tonight might be slightly exaggerated for storyline purposes? I hope so. I think so. But I, you know, I'm not ruling out that there isn't something to that. So, yeah, I do want to say, I mean, there's creative license that's going to go into this storyline. And Seth going, I don't know how much longer I can do this. It does not mean that he won't be 44 years old and still doing it at, you know, a slightly scaled back level.
Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, he didn't say which two vertebrae were broken, so it might have been the unimportant ones.
Yes. Yeah. all right. So I want to give you a chance before I wrap up here to bring up anything that we haven't that you have something to say about. I didn't like that sentence, and I knew it midway through. I hadn't started it the right way, but. We had Chelsea Green, Piper Niven, and how that got established or set up. I'm trying to think of anything else kind of – we talked Ciampa. I mean, yeah, I don't know if there's anything else that you want to bring up that we didn't cover. We didn't talk a ton about Gunther, Chad Gable, actually. And that, I could have led with that too. So feel free to start a convo there. And then the New Day, Matt Riddle, Drew McIntyre match and follow-up.
Yeah, I also hated the way you phrased that because I'm like, is he setting up something for something I was supposed to – am I supposed to announce something? but yeah, so, yeah, there was a lot of we didn't talk about. Yeah. The Drew McIntyre and Matt Riddle, I'm assuming that somebody's got to turn heel there, right?
Don't know. I'm as sure as you just phrased it, but I mean, before this started, I thought Drew McIntyre should be a heel and he's going to be irritated by Riddle and they're going to juxtapose Orton showing his softer side with Riddle and kind of not just enduring him, but kind of learning to enjoy Riddle bringing Orton out of the stick in the mud mode that he's often in. And I think so they can juxtapose the Drew Riddle dynamic that way by having it go a different direction. And I think we've seen hints and clues of that. I am sort of hoping for a New Day heel turn, but I don't really think I don't know how you do that just because of Riddle and Drew, unless New Day start making fun of Drew for tolerating Riddle or something like that. But that might feel forced. I could see Drew, they just want to recapture RK-Bro with Mick Riddle and roll with it for a while and see what happens. And maybe they've got two courses that they're considering.
Yeah. And Wade Barrett really felt like upset that they didn't go with Edinbrose, which would have been great. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Cause when they introduced Viking Raiders into this, I just think that Viking Raiders are like so really damaged now that it felt like it brought down anything that Drew and Riddle could do, which is why I think that they've got to break them up because, you know, otherwise they're going to be like, you know, so far down the card that they're wasting. I mean, I know there are issues with Matt Riddle, but with they'd be wasting Drew if they don't do something along those lines. Or even if Riddle like is upset at the disrespect, you know, because Drew borderline disrespected him on the show, you know, on this. So maybe he gets, you know, maybe it's Riddle who turns heel, but I figure they got to do something because I'm not liking the direction that this is going for either of them. I like the Shayna Baszler promo, which I know you know this, Wade, because I know you're a hardcore gamer, but it was very similar to the X-ray attacks in Mortal Kombat, where there are attacks where you hit and then the camera like, you know, shows the breaking bones and stuff. So I dug that, you know, how they did that with Shayna Baszler doing the things. It made it look like, you know, an exaggeration of her moves, and I like that. And hopefully that just means good things for her. And then you mentioned the Chad Gable Gunther thing. I mean, I don't know. I was kind of like, I didn't like the way. I kind of wish that he had come out serious. I didn't like the way that they did the whole – they went through their whole spiel again. This is – you know, he is wrestling Gunther, and we know that he's a good wrestler. I would have preferred if they had just left the shtick in the back, particularly when they both – you know, like Otis and – what's her name?
Maxine.
When they both, you know, put him over – and he, you know, I'd rather he had said just thank you normally, like maybe sell, like he's going to say thank you, but, you know, but say it like in a normal tone and walk out not being a joke and then walk out like the American, you know, the American alpha version of Chad Gable for that match. Maybe we still get to see that at Payback when, you know, they run it back. You know, so hopefully, I mean, I was also disappointed that we didn't really get a, I was disappointed that we didn't get an actual finish because, you know, it was a good match. So,
I want Gable to not lean so hard on his two things. Like I want a more serious side, and I'm curious if that's, you know, if they've thought about this, and they're going to go there, or if they're just like, no, this is just a fun little thing for Gable to do. But, you know, ultimately we're going to define him back down because we have comedy stuff for him to do in the mid card again. But if there's hope for him to be more, I don't know that what we've seen so far, other than what he's been able to do in the ring, which has been great, is setting the table for that.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, and you can still do some of it, but just tone it down, you know? You know, because right now he's a cartoon. You could basically have him act normal and occasionally do it just to, you know, get under somebody's skin.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and the thing is that somebody has got to take it off, because I'm assuming Gunther's not going to have it for that much longer. Someone's going to have to take it, you know, from him. And, you know, I don't want, you know, like the completely jokey Chad Gable being the one, because Gunther's made that title mean something. If you all of a sudden, you know, go to the, you know, thank you guy, then you're devaluing the title like almost immediately too. So.
Yeah.
And let me see. I think that is, I loved, Cole taking a shot at, Byron Saxton's, facial hair. That was fun. He had something going on for sure. Oh, and then, yeah, my last thing, I think is my last thing. Let me just double check.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, Cody, I know we talked about the, you know, we're setting aside the Funko Pop, you know, shot at this guy. I just find the way that he basically manipulates the audience to be like amazing. How he starts that interview in the back, and we've complained about, you know, oh, you know, he's not been doing these great interviews in the back, and here he goes to, and he's like, oh, I'm gonna be a good guy, and I'm gonna go out there and share it with the actual audience. That was like great. And then tie himself to Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in their own home province so he could get some of the rub, some of the hometown rub from them. So that when he actually comes out to save them, there's this massive pop because he's coming. It's just, I mean, chef's kiss, like how, like, I mean, he learned from his father. Okay. He is his father's son. It's just, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, at some point, you know, and I mean, recently he tweeted out that he's, oh, I've been waiting for, you know, Twitter keeps telling us that, you know, that, you know, that the crowd's going to start booing, that they, you know, they're expecting the crowd to boo me. And they've been saying that for 2 years. Has he been in the WWE for 2 years?
Maybe just short of that.
Okay. Cause I mean, if it has been 2 years, then okay. But if it was, you know, if it's been long, because we remember how AEW ended, Cody. You know, and it's like, you know, people are with you for now, but like the moment that, you know, if ever anything happens that takes that veil out of people's eyes that they, you know, how they've been playing with, they're going to hate you. And I mean, then you have a choice to have a great heel run. But right now it's like, just, it's so awesome. It's just so awesome to see him, like, you know, keep himself like at a high level and the tricks and stuff that he does. So really, really thoroughly enjoy that.
Cool. I'm good. Javier, thank you.
All right. So,
yeah. Good conversation.
Everybody stay tuned for the primer for All In. So I got All In, All Out, and then Payback. That's going to be.
Oh, thank you, Javier. All right, cool. Well, thank you, listeners. Thank you, emailers. Thank you, callers. Thank you, everybody. And I'll sign off for today. But don't forget, Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Jason Powell joins me tomorrow.
Have a good night.